You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Okay, welcome back. It's time once again to go down and visit the council.
Gangnam Style.
You know, we had so much fun with social scientist Chris Hawkins last week. He hasn't come back again. It's not that we didn't finish talking about Little Ahi, because we can talk about them till the cows come home. But, you know, we're going to talk about something that's a little bit more dear to heart, and that is, with a whole bunch of people and a limited resource, there are sometimes differences of opinion between fishing and taking and care. And what we hear, of course, a lot is the word malama the aina, malama the kai. And I know that the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council is sensitive to this all over the Pacific. So we're not so unique. And yet, in some respects, we are. So, Chris Hawkins, that's kind of a long introduction. But I think the point that we're trying to make is that we all have to face the fact that not everybody are good stewards, and not everybody understands the needs of others. So we got kind of some pretty interesting things to look at here in our fishery. When did it first become apparent to the council that we needed to spend some time and really look into how this is impacting the fishery and the people?
You know, in terms of the history of this, it's sort of multifaceted, and it's all over the region, like you said. It's not just here in Hawaii. I think the council becomes aware of it depending on the jurisdiction. So, for example, in Guam, over the last several years, the council has been informed by our council family out there that there's some issues, and they're largely along the lines of the newcomers coming onto the island of Guam, mostly from the Compact of Free Association states, so Micronesia. Which they're allowed to under the compact to immigrate to the United States. And they bring with them a different set of values, perhaps, or certainly a different way of fishing. They may even do fish on Guam in ways that they wouldn't fish back home for various reasons, back home, so to speak. They may have more social control in their daily lives from the island system, the traditional cultural system. You come to an island like Guam or even Oahu, and you don't have those social controls anymore, and you might fish differently. And the thing is that many of these folks may not even realize that they're causing
a
problem.
Therein lies, I think, really what it is. And we want to say that we are aloha this and aloha that. In some cases, it may not be so apparent, particularly the newcomers that we are. But I think that maybe you could point out what maybe and talk about your area of expertise, the societal part of this, is that sometimes if you've never had restrictions or limits or anything or seasons, and you go to a place where those things are in play, you know, it's sometimes just ignorance. You just don't know this is going on.
Right, exactly. And I think one of the big places and times where ignorance comes up is that anybody can come to here to Hawaii and go on the website or go to DAR and look up the regulations for fishing. But it's hard to know in a specific...
You're assuming somebody's unable to do that, right?
Yeah. Generally, somebody can enlist some help and they can figure out what the formal government regulations are. Much harder to move to a community or to go to a specific bay like Monolua Bay or some other bay here on Oahu or in the Hawaiian Islands and know what the local sort of the under the surface rules are, what we would call norms. You know,
that's like the home rule side.
Yeah.
This is what we do in this bay and
nothing
else.
We don't fish over there in this bay. It's not that the state says you can't. It's not that there's no law against it. But locally, it's a no-no. And you might go and you might go fish there and you wouldn't know. This has happened to me in different places. And you get scolded and yelled at, and there's sometimes some bad words and maybe even some physical altercations that happen. We see this on the Big Island in the last 5 or 6 years has happened as well. People's tires get slashed and their windows get broken.
Yeah, and these are both using the resource for different reasons.
Huh.
One wants to look at aquarium fish. One wants to collect them, you know.
Exactly.
But I have another thing, and I don't know how this plays into it. Sometimes we just had a recent situation arise up with cucumbers, with sea cucumbers, where they were just taking thousands of these things because there was a market, a demand.
Right. Yep.
And it was something that was just, I guess, never taken advantage of before or was never realized before. And all of a sudden we rear back and we just get all, and that actually caused some problems in the neighborhood. That happened out in Waimanalo and other places.
Yep.
somewhere there's we got to be able to fix this somehow.
Right, and in that case, my understanding it was not a against the law what was
it
happening
wasn't, really,
but it was definitely offending the local sensibilities in the Waimanalo community and parts of the rest of Oahu when that came to light and pictures came out. So it is difficult, and unfortunately, sometimes those things escalate, and there can be some physical altercations.
Well, remember we had the one. There was a UH scientist that said that based on studies that these animals, if you take them out in that quantity, it could take 50 or 100 years for them to get back.
Right.
And you tell that to a local resident, boy, they're going to fly off the handle and get crazy. I would.
Yeah, exactly. When I lived in American Samoa, it was often we would look at, you know, what are the other island group folks that were nearby to Samoa. You know, they're coming in and taking the resource, and they may be fishing the exact same way in some cases. It may not be violating the rules or even the norms, but there's sometimes just it's a us versus them
I was gonna
mentality.
Say, you know, and it's really, it's apparent. And I'm not sure what the reason for of paying attention to this or what the solutions are. Social and, I don't know, some of it's economic. Sometimes these folks are out getting everything they can from the sea because they got no money and they got to eat.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, in the council, I think, our perspective is that we definitely understand the between groups conflicts. But we, you know, you expect conflict between extractive users like fishermen and non-extractive users like, say, scuba divers or snorkelers. You expect there's a certain amount of tension. The council really always wants to make sure that fishermen, whatever kind of fishermen they are, and wherever they're from, are working things out in an amicable manner, that there's no conflict, because that does not help the fishery as a whole.
Yeah,
it doesn't help
way,
fishermen.
If you take a look at this segment of our program, and if you take a look at Chris and everybody that's there working, the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, we are concerned with fishermen and the fishery.
Yeah.
The outside influences are fine, but in actual fact, most of the decisions get made by the fish takers.
Yeah. You know, we kind of look at it as like a family. You know, your family, your mother, father, brothers, and sisters, you're all going to disagree, but we want the family to kind of work things out. We understand that another family, you know, may disagree with our family, but we want our family to be working things out and not fighting with each other, so that we can keep our resources and marshal our resources to deal with some of the other conflicts and issues we have to deal with these other groups.
Yeah, let me ask you this, because I do know that a lot of the decision-making process that goes on is based on the ability to monitor and enforce and things. And we know that right now we're looking at the state level of a 10% cutback across the board in all departments. That's going to affect our ability to police one another. So that must mean that whatever decisions get made on this or any other subject, we've got to sort of do it ourselves.
Right. And that's one of the reasons that the council has spent so much time lately in working with communities around our region on things like community-based fishery management plans, because we're trying to set up the infrastructure in the community to deal with these issues. Because just as you said, we've seen reductions, and they weren't great in the first place, the funding for enforcement and monitoring.
We've never spent too much money in
it. Exactly. Yeah. And so to the extent that we can empower and enable the communities to ameliorate these conflicts before they begin via some kind of a structured process that's already in place, that's what the council really wants to do out here in the Pacific.
Let me ask you this, because I think this is important. I know a lot of times when you do field work and you're gathering data or anecdotal stuff from people, that they'll say, well, you know, this guy down the road, I mean, he's nets are in the water all the time.
Yep.
We call it, nothing happens. It's like, you know, that must come up a lot. And to deal with that, I want to know how you deal with it.
You know, when you're collecting data, you know, if you're me and you're out there and you're doing your social science thing, one of the ways that I deal with it sort of right in the moment is that you have to hear them. You have to make sure they understand that you've heard what they're saying before. You don't want to be patronizing, and you don't want to disagree or agree so much. You want to
kill the messenger. Give me the stuff.
Give me
need.
The information. Right. That's great. And that does filter up to the process, and that's what folks need to know, is that if you're talking to a council staffer or a council member about these issues and you're pointing out a problem, you may not get immediate relief, but these things do filter up and they do get into the process. And they are the basis for many of the things that we do over the years.
Where does the science part of it come from? I mean, you know, we do know that there are, you know, a limited amount of fish out there and lots of people want to take them. And it's not just about give and take, but it's about trying to avoid or disarm or, you know, mitigate conflict between peoples, because you talked earlier before about it. It's one thing to yell at each other, but when it gets to the next level, then we have a real problem. We have real social issues.
And those issues are happening, and they're playing out across the Pacific right now. I mentioned Guam at the beginning, and we've seen the same thing that we saw on the Big Island a few years ago. Slashed tires, broken windows, things like that. We don't want that. We really want to try to head that off. Where the science comes in, at least for me, is it's a structured process of understanding the issue and the attitudes and the perceptions that underpin this issue. It's not saying I talked to one or two folks and now I have the whole story. It's that process of talking to a representative number of the people involved in the different groups in a structured way that allows me to have some confidence in what I'm presenting as the data for that issue.
And therein lies the whole reason for not only what we're doing here on the program, but for the council to be able to identify what is the role and what's the job and what's the hope, what's the golden pot or whatever it is at the end of the rainbow that's going to fix all this stuff.
Right.
It must be sometimes hard on this issue. Does it help that a lot of times now at the fishery level, we are including more home rule, more people from a local district to input that district?
I think
with seasons and sizes and boundaries.
I think it's always going to help, and I think that's why the way the ancient Hawaiians practiced management was because of that. And you know, you mentioned science. It's important with this conflict. So interesting, the topic of conflict, because you've got different kinds of conflict. You have what we social scientists call goal interference conflict, and that's just simply what you're doing is interfering with the ability for me to do what I want to do.
Right,
I've got a goal, and you're interfering with it.
Yeah, you're water skiing, and I'm trying to catch fish.
Yeah, that's a goal interference.
Whatever. Yeah,
but there's another type of conflict called just social values conflict, and it's not that what you're doing interferes with what I'm trying to do. It's that what you're doing just rubs me the wrong way. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like
it. And that's a whole different kind of conflict.
Sure.
And understanding that and working towards some solution is different. You know what? One of the examples I like to point out to folks about conflict and people who don't even know they're in conflict, which we call asymmetric conflict because it's not equal on both sides, is boaters will know this. The practice with boaters is you wave to each other out on the water if you're passing each other. That's just a norm. There's no rule that says you have to, but most people wave to each other. So if you've got a kayaker or a canoer and you've got a motorboater, the motorboater might go by and he might wave to the kayaker or the canoer. And the kayaker or the canoer is just kind of out of convention going to wave back. But oftentimes he's under his breath saying, that jerk, he's creating a wake,
sometimes it's not a wave, it's a one-finger wave.
Yeah.
You know, when you wake my kayak and I fall over because you were going too fast near me.
But the boater might not see that. And the boater might see somebody waving back at him, and they think everything's all great. Mm-hmm. That little do they realize that somebody's really mad at them right then. And we have to keep that in mind.
Waving because they need help.
Yeah, right.
You know, they're not just saying hi. They're saying, come here, I need some help over here. You
but
know?
The convention is to wave, and if two people are waving, both groups might think that everything's all hunky-dory, when in fact one group has got no problem and is oblivious, and the other group is really mad.
What can we do when people perceive there to be an issue? I mean, they want to go somewhere, and I know that they can call, 643 DLNR if they see a rule being broken. But what about if they want to come to the council and say, "Hey, you know, I'm not clear about some things. Where can I get some more information? Where can I find out where I fit into this picture?"
I think all of the eight fishery management councils, but especially ours, are very open to just coming on in.
Mm-hmm.
We make the time for fishermen. There's no appointment necessary. We've got a professional staff 15 folks or so.
And by the way, they got some really neat stuff when you go there. You got some really neat artifacts and
little
things hanging around there.
And you just come in, you talk to the receptionist, Bella, and she will find you the right person to come and sit down with you. You certainly can call. You can certainly email. But we're right down on Bishop Street, and we're always happy to have walk-ins. We're like a barbershop that way.
And what I'm going to do, gang, and it's true, because, I mean, I go in there at all odd times of the day, and they're always so happy to see everybody that comes there. And it's because I think that you guys and gals are a driven group. Nobody's doing this for a paycheck. You're doing it because you got some commitments that you've made. I think that's great.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think that's absolutely true at the councils and even the fishery service, that they are a driven group. The council has, like I said, about 15 professional staff to handle all of this, so we're very intimately familiar with each and every issue. The fishery service has a much larger staff, so perhaps on an individual basis, some of those people aren't as aware of all of the issues that are going on. But the council staff in general, we've got staff meetings every week, and we really do know what's going on. So come in and talk to us.
Yeah, and I think what's really important here, gang, is as a parting shot with Chris Hawkins today, is that, you know, every now and again you'll see something in the press. If you can give some input to it, even if it's anonymously, that would be a great help making decisions down the road.
Yep.
That's going to do it for this segment. Chris, thanks very much. I'll see you again real soon.
Thank you.
And for the rest of you, we'll be back next week with another episode. In the meantime, if you want to find out what's happening at this council, or if you just want to come down and see some of the neat stuff on Bishop Street, I mean, really, there are things from throughout the region that are just fantastic. It's like a museum. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. In the meantime, if you have something you want to hear on the program, you go to themikebuckshow@aol.com. themikebuckshow@aol.com. And once again, if you want to find out what's going on at the council, it's easy. wpcouncil.org. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next time. Aloha.